Goldie and Touch beginning on time for perhaps the first time in Wildy and Touch history, but that's because just like the 2010 Green Bay Packers upgraded at right tackle on their way to a title, we upgrade with the guy who replaced old boy then, and he replaces him now. While Touch is doing good works for Feeding America, it's Brian Bulaga on Wildy and Touch. Brian, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Are you a not a high snap count guy? Is that your reputation? You saw that quote from LaFleur obviously yesterday about Rashawn Gary. We were having a little bit of fun with it, but I don't think that was the excuse that Matt LaFleur was wanting it to be, because yeah. I think there's been some eye rolling since.
I don't know if that's what he was going for. Like, I don't think that's what he was intending. No, unfortunately, linemen, we don't get the choice. Like, the high snap count, low snap count. There were times where, it sticks out in my memory. We were in Miami, and it was like a 90 snap count day. That game where Aaron threw it to Corliss in the corner of the end zone. It was like 95 degrees, and I think we ran around 90 plays. It was when Philbin was the head coach in 2014. It was absolutely miserable. So, like, snap count really wasn't our choice. It was how many plays we ran is what we ran, and didn't matter. It was either 90, it could be 50, it could be 40 if we were really bad that day. Didn't matter. But, I don't think that probably wasn't really his intended messaging he was probably going for there. But I think Rashawn, because what did he have, Jace? What was it, like 30-something snaps? Or what was it, 40?
Yeah,
was
I think
it 48
34.
Or,
let me double-check that. Yeah. Let me double-check that while you continue.
Because, like, I think what we're going to probably need to see from Rashawn, like, because, I mean, we all know pass rushers, right? Like, we know the more reps they get, the more opportunities they get at, you know, getting sacks and big plays and negative, you know, all those big stats that they want. And if you start to see guys that are making the $19 to $20 million, you know, the big money, right, you know, getting less, you know, snaps, there's going to be more questions, right? And that's, he has to answer those, not just Rashawn, but also Matt has to answer those questions too. And that just, as Mike always said, like, you don't want to create questions for others. And like, that's all that this, yeah, all that's becoming, right? Like, that's what this is becoming. Matt has to answer them. I'm sure Rashawn has to answer them. And I'm sure guys in the locker room now have to answer that. And it puts everyone in a tough position, but in at the minimum, it puts Rashawn in a tough position because he has to answer for it, right? Like, He's one of the highest paid guys on that defense at the end of the day, right? Like, at the end of the day, it's his production. He's got to take care of business, and guys rely on him, right? He's one of the leaders of that team by any stretch. I mean, I'm not in that locker room day in and day out, but he's got to start coming good, right? I mean, you thought the Parsons effect would, you know, and it did early on, I think, right? Like, I mean, because what does he have, 6.5 sacks right now? Six and a half.
So here's the statistical line for him. And by the way, let me give you this first before I change windows. The Packers ran 72 defensive snaps against the Giants. Okay. Mm-hmm. The defensive linemen, and this includes defensive tackles, but here are the snap counts for them. The leader in snap counts in with 61, which was 85%, Micah Parsons. Which I think is part of this equation when we're having this conversation. Colby Wooden, 48. Kingsley Enagbare, 40. Rashawn Gary, 39. Carl Brooks, 37. Devontae Wyatt, 34. Nazir Stackhouse, 14. Baron Sorrell, 12. Warren Brinson, 6. So look, Ken Ingles, the Packers cap guy on Twitter, pointed this out. You know, last season, Micah Parsons had 696 defensive snaps. Rashawn Gary had 636, which is in the same ballpark, right? Except Micah Parsons missed four full games with an injury.
I was going to say he missed a lot of games. Yeah.
So, I don't, you know, I want to get to the offensive line. I know you got some other stuff going on yourself today, so I don't want to belabor this point. My only issue is that whether it's fair or not, when you're a first round pick, when you get a large contract extension, expectations come with that. And while you're right, like he started like gangbusters. You know, Micah Parsons has overtaken him for the sack lead on the team. Parsons now has 8. Rashawn Gary has 7.5. But he hasn't had a sack since Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. And more significantly, if you look at Micah Parsons' pressure numbers, he's second in the entire NFL in total pressures. He's got 56. Like, he's the one who's getting the greater amount of attention. So, again, I really am not. I had somebody, I think Jim, in the YouTube comments say, you know, is this going to be a hit piece? No, but it is an issue. It is something that we have to ask about. Like, again, we're not talking about, well, why isn't Brenton Cox playing a higher number of snaps? Now, I know he's on injured reserve, but my point being is that Rashawn Gary, the whole idea that we all had, and we thought that is exactly what was happening early in the season, he had 4.5 sacks after 3 games, right?
Yeah.
He's got 3 in the last 7. Was Parsons draws attention. Parsons is a dominant player. Rising tide lifts all boats. Rashawn Gary's more productive. And there was a time where it was, and now we're wondering why it's not. And then when the head coach says he's never been a big snap count guy, that I wonder what Matt was thinking when he said that. Because I don't think he realized what it was going to sound like after it came out of his mouth.
Yeah, I don't know what that means exactly. Like, I don't know exactly what that means. Never been a big snap count guy. Maybe I don't know, because I don't want to assume. You know what I mean? I don't want to assume what he meant. I don't want to assume what he meant. But you expect with the amount of snaps that the Giants ran, right, that Rashawn would be out there for around 50 snaps, right? I mean, around 50, 55-ish snaps would be my guess, right? Because then when you add Van Ness back into this, right, when you add Van Ness back into this, whenever he's going to be back, right, I don't know. I mean, I have no idea. Maybe you'll have a better idea once practice gets going today and all that. What's that going to look like then, right? Like, what's going to be the breakdown, right? Like, I have no idea. I don't know the health of Rashawn Gary. He's not on the injury report, so we have to assume that he's okay. But, you know, guys – you have to assume he's fine. Guys deal with things, and we have no idea, but you have to assume the health is fine. That's all we can go based off is an injury report. And as we know, since the Lamar Jackson thing, teams are pretty strict about that these days. So we know how that goes. But, it's one of those things now. I think he has to step his game up, right? Like, and I think he knows that, right? And when you start to get your reps cut down, that's like the telltale sign, right? As a defensive player, as a pass rusher, when you start to get your reps cut and you see where Micah's reps are and you see where your reps are, then you start to see where everyone else's is, that's got to be the sign. I don't think anyone needs to tell you anything, right? Like, I don't think your coaches need to say anything. It's just simply how much are you on the field? That should be like the ultimate sign, right? Like, I mean, at this point in time, he's been in the league how long? What is he in his 6th year, 7th year? I don't know exactly.
7th year. What is it? 7th. This is Gary's 7th year. It's Micah's 5th year.
Yeah, so he's in his 7th year, and he knows, like, it's simply based on, like, how many opportunities are you getting? Like, it's clear, like, no one's chewing him out, like, at this point in time. Like, he's not going into meetings and getting screamed at by coach. Like, that's not happening now. So it's an opportunity thing. Like, he sees himself on tape. He sees the other guys around him the opportunities they're getting and the reps they're getting in practice and how that's getting divvied up. So it's what he's doing on the field and the production. Like, that's how this is going now. So, and the coaches are going to put the guys out there that are producing and are giving them the best opportunity. And I understand he's a very highly paid guy. He's shown those flashes, especially early on, right? I mean, you said it. He was 4.5 sacks in 3 games. He came out crazy hot, and I thought he was going to be at 10 sacks after, you know, after 8 games. I thought he was that's how hot this was, that start was going to go. I thought that's how this was going to be, and it's just kind of cooled off. Now, he could get to 10 sacks after this week, technically, right? I mean, he could be at 10 sacks after this week, and we could all be like, wow, look at us.
Sure.
We look like morons. Like, we're talking,
which
like
would
this,
be great. Great.
Yes, I know. I completely agree. But it's just one of those things that when you have spells like this, right, it and then your reps get cut, it opens up the questions. And that's where we're at right now. Unfortunately, that's the way this goes.
All right, let's do one more guy that is not living up to expectations, and then we'll be more positive, as Mike McCarthy would say. How do you look at the Luke Musgrave experiment? Because another guy, if again, snap counts are part of the equation. They're not everything, right? Don't count the snaps. Make the snaps count, as coaches like to say.
That's right.
But Josh Wiley Coyote and John Fitzpatrick played more snaps than Luke Musgrave did. And if you're not a blocking tight end...
Yeah.
And you're a pass-catching tight end, dropping 2 passes thrown to you is not ideal. So how do you view Matt LaFleur said on Monday that was their mistake. They need to get him. It's been addressed with the coaching staff. He needs to get more reps. But again, what is he going to do with those reps? How do you view the saga without Tucker Kraft? How do you view Luke Musgrave?
Yeah, it's an interesting situation because I think we'll put it this way, like I think, and you may agree or disagree, but like I think like this is going to start to become a lot of, especially with Jacobs, I don't know how much time he's going to miss, and this is going to become, I think, very Jordan Love centric. Over the next few weeks, right? Like, I think it's going to be very Jordan Love centric, which I'm okay with, right? Like, I think Jordan Love is, I think this is like the time where like you do need to kind of cut him loose and let him run this thing and let him go and let him do this, right? But with that being said, right? With that being said, he also needs at time to be able to rely on a run game from time to time, right? He needs to be able to have that option to be able to run the ball and do those things, and with that, the tight ends are a big part of that, right? And if you have a tight end in the game that struggles at that, you can't just bring in a tight end that can only catch the ball. Like, defense is key on those things. That is like the biggest key when tight ends come on and off the field, and that substitution pattern shows that. Like, that's the biggest key for defenses. Like, and when if Musgrave comes on and off the field, like, defense, no, it's a pass. And then they can make subs based off of that. Like, and it's the easiest thing for especially like this Minnesota defense with Flores and how they pressure and their substitution patterns and what they're able to do. Like, it's very difficult for LaFleur to, based on personnel groupings and things like that, to just like keep Musgrave on the field at all the time if they're going to be trying to disguise things and run the football. So like you look at Wiley and Fitzpatrick, they're better run blockers. So like if you want to be able to have the option to be very multiple with personnel groupings and run the ball, and then obviously be able to have Jordan cut it loose whenever in any personnel grouping, those are kind of the guys. Now, if you're just in straight 11, right, if you're in straight 11 and you know this is we're opening this thing up, we're going to pass it. Yeah, I mean, we may be able to run the football in 11 and you know, we can afford to have you know, I mean, it's not like he can't block anybody. Like, let's be real. He can block people, but it's not a strong suit. But if we're in 11 and we're just going to be in 11, then yeah, you're going to have, because like I still think he's the best option to, you know, have out there for a pass catching tight end as Musgrave. I get he dropped a couple, but I still think as of right now he's our best pass catching option for tight ends. I do. I still believe that. But if you want to be multiple, then that makes it difficult. It just does. So I still think we're going to see that rotation of those three guys. I do. I mean, I get Matt said that like we've addressed it and things like that. But listen, man, those I thought those tight ends, the you know, Wiley and Fitz, I thought those guys did good. You know what I mean? I think those guys, you know, for the most part, I think they did a nice job. And listen, like, you can't be predictable. Like, that's the one thing. Like, and you have to be able to mix things up and give guys opportunities and see how they seize it and make the most out of it. And you can't just rely on Jordan to just, like I said early last week, to throw the ball 40 plus times. You have to allow him to be able to run the football too. And with that, that's the tight ends. And that's Wiley. I think Wiley's a good blocker. So if he's in there, he can run routes and block and do those things. So it's all based on how you're going to attack the Vikings. And the Vikings, we know, have a good defense. They mix things up. They pressure quite a bit. So if you're going to have a tight end that stays in to block, who's going to be the tight end you're going to stay in to block? There's a good chance it's probably going to be Wiley. Mm-hmm. So there's certain things that you have to consider when you're putting in these personnel packages and groupings that you're going to have stay in, if it's going to be a six-man protection, seven-man protection, that you have to consider. So I understand what Matt said, that we have to get him out there more, but this isn't the same defense that you're going against the Giants. This is the Vikings defense that pressures a lot, or they simulate pressure a lot. They show pressure mm-hmm. looks that you have to prepare for. And Flores, he runs a good defense, man. They're a tough defense. And Green Bay struggled with them last year, if we remember correctly. Like, they struggled with them last year on the offensive side of the ball. So, like, this is going to be a tough test. And up front, it's a big test. It's a big test up front. So you want to be able to have guys that you know can secure the front seven. And that's a big deal.
All right, Brian, speaking of that, I want to get into the offensive line next, which is your area of expertise, and we are always smarter because of our conversations about that. I want to talk about what you saw from Sean Ryan at center. I had a lovely conversation with Jordan Morgan, who I don't know how much you – when you came to talk to the team, that was that last season that you were there?
2 years ago. That
okay,
was two
so
years.
You've never – you yeah. have. You've never really interacted with. He's a good kid, man. He's low key. He wants to be good, but he wants to be left tackle.
Yeah.
And I think he knows that he's not like you. Hey, in fairness to him, one of the best right tackles in Packers history has publicly admitted on this show he sucked as a guard, and his name is Brian Bulaga.
I'll hopefully admit that. Openly admit it.
So I had a good conversation with him. I want to talk to you a little bit about that. We'll do that coming up. After I tell you about the jingle for your Kringle contest, it's back. You're hearing the commercials. You're hearing the girls singing versus mine. There's a big disparity there. I am not eligible for Kringle for a year, but you could be if you win our annual jingle for your Kringle contest. Couple of rules. One, your jingle has to be 60 seconds or less. Two, it has to include Racine Danish Kringle's tagline. It's not just a treat, it's a tradition. Other than that, get those creative juices flowing. Get your entry in. You can send it on ESPNWisconsin.com or ESPNWisconsinContest.com. But this is one of the most fun things we do every year. They've got a new flavor this year, peppermint brownie, which we're excited about. I can't wait to try it. But they've been an awesome partner to us throughout the years, and we're really excited to keep this contest going. I would love to max out our entries this year. It's not very hard. Sing into your phone, sing a cappella, have background singers, whatever you need. But you got a chance to win Kringle for a year. Again, go to ESPNWisconsinContests.com to find out more. More with Brian Bulaga next. It's Wilde and Tausch.
I'll see it in you. Wonder if I'll always be with you. Words can't
We roll on with Ryan Bulaga as Tausch is unloading peanut butter jars and other great things for feeding Wisconsin, or feeding America, Eastern Wisconsin. Brian, I need to know, because you know, and I'll talk to you later today also on the Homer Hour, but you know that I would keep you, well, till the end of the show. So, how much more time do you have? I do not want to keep you beyond your limit.
Got about till, well, I'm on Eastern time, so about till around 11:45
Okay.
Eastern Standard Time.
Okay. I will make the most of our 19 minutes together. Let's start with the offensive line, because you make a really important point, and that is Brian Flores' defense is no joke, especially when it comes to pressures and how you handle them and what happens if you don't handle them. So what did you see against the Giants, who have a really good front four? I saw a few plays where people were unaccounted for and Jordan Love was running for his life, which is not a good harbinger of things to come this week. What did you see? And then extrapolate that forward to what we're going to see on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, there was, and I don't know what to account it for, right? I mean, I there was one play where, going back and watching it, Rob mentioned it on Monday, and I saw the play, and then Rob mentioned it to Homer and I on Monday, that I went back and watched it again, where Dexter Lawrence got cut loose. Rob mentioned it, that Matt mentioned it in the presser, because I don't watch much of Matt's pressers, because I don't pay, you know, I don't watch unless there's clips and cut-ups of them. And he mentioned that they cut Dexter Lawrence loose, and I saw the play. That can't happen, obviously. We know that can't happen. You can't cut, like, nose or shades loose in the middle of the defense. We can't do that. So there's one or two things, especially, and Matt said that they were supposed to be double-teaming him. So that means two guys cut him loose. Which is a big problem. So that's like a
that
big problem.
That can't happen very often, where your instruction is to double team a guy and neither of the double teamers team him at all.
Yeah, that's a bad thing. Not one guy touched him. So here's my rundown of that. So there's obviously was a call, and my only assumption is both guys saw their ID backer move one way. They both thought that they had to peel off on him quick. They both left the down man, and they should not have left the down man. And yeah, but here's the thing. That's what is going to happen early on with a brand new center. And that only happened once. Like that did not happen again. I will say that did not happen again. But like that's the kind of thing you see when like, and I said that, with Sean being his first time as a true starter, at center, right? His first full time. And that could have been something that happened. There were obviously, you talked about it as well. I heard you talk about it on the post, and then we talked about it a little bit on Monday too. A couple bad snaps. Again, I could have predicted that as well. That was a chance there could have been some bad snaps. I think that's stuff that gets cleaned up as well, right? Like, I think those are things that get cleaned up as well. But now I'm going to move to the positives of Sean Ryan and how he played at the center position. I thought he was very physical in the run game. I think that was something that he did very well. I thought he was very physical when he did. And again, it was only one time, so like I'm just joking around. The time he did stick on his double team, which was like, again, it was just one time.
Right.
The time he did fit on double teams and they did combo block, he was very physical at the point of attack. They did climb well up on double teams, because like if you look at Josh Jacobs before he was injured, I mean, he was at 7 carries for 40 yards, averaging like 5.2 or 5.
Yep.
Whatever. It's like,
yep.
I mean, they were running the ball very well to start that game. Then obviously he got hurt, and then Emmanuel Wilson came in, and I think they didn't run it as well, right? But again, this is why I'm saying like Jacobs is a different beast, right? Jacobs is a different back. But so they were running the football well. But at the same time, let's not forget, Jordan Love got hurt at the same time when all that happened, right? So you remove Jordan Love from that equation, and now teams know they're running the football. So like it's a different everything changed in that instance as well when all this kind of started to happen. So let's not forget that. But I think overall, Sean Ryan did a nice job, and I think another week of prep, he will be even more secure. But when you look at this now, this is a big week for him because with this Minnesota defense, they show a lot of different looks, and they move guys around quite a bit, right? And your IDs have to be very good. So, like, they move different, we'll just say, pass rushers, right? So they, like, it's what's that? The outside linebacker, is it Van Ginkle? Is that his name?
Yes, Andrew Van Ginkle, yes. Former Badger. Yes, sir.
Yes, Van Ginkle. They move him around all over the place. So he'll line up at DN. He'll line up at linebacker. He'll go all over the place. But he is a pass rusher, right? Like he is a pass rusher. So depending how Matt and Steno and Butkus, how they game plan this, like they're most likely IDing him as a pass rusher, even if he's lined up at linebacker. So like the line and Sean Ryan, they have to be really disciplined with how they ID him and their eyes and how they're sliding protection and how they track him and things like that. And then there are other pass rushers too. So this is a big week with their communication, with their eyes, how they're passing off stunts and twists, because if you aren't staying on levels and staying connected with each other, you're going to get beat. You're going to get picked. You're going to get beat. Van Ginkle and those guys are very good. They twist and they do stunts very well that you're going to be just cutting guys loose. And they're going to just be flying up the middle, right? And that's not what you want against this defense. Because once Flores finds something that works, you may not see the same pressure, but you're going to see different varieties of it in different types of ways, right? It's kind of it's not exactly like Zimmer, right? Because Zimmer would do things – you would see different looks from Zimmer. Like you would see the same look right from Zimmer, but it would you would get different variations of it. And that's kind of what Flores does, right? It would be a chess game between Aaron and Zimmer, and then the way we would ID things and the games we would play with Zimmer up front. It was very unique how we would go against the Vikings with Zimmer and his pressure packages and all those with Barr and Hendricks and all those and the way they did those things. And that's kind of the way Flores does his stuff with those linebackers and pass rushers. So that's these guys have to be on point with their identifications. And this is a big week for Jordan too, right? Like, because Jordan has to help out Sean Ryan. He has to help out Sean Ryan, right? Because this is a center that is by all means inexperienced.
Sure.
This is his second game IDing defenses at this position, right? This isn't what he's normally at guard, right? Like, I mean, and I'm not saying he doesn't know what he's doing and he doesn't know the offense, but like it's a different beast when you're hands on the ball and you're pointing everything out for everybody, right? Like it's a different beast. So Jordan can really help out Sean Ryan this week by identifying things and seeing things and confirming. Especially at home when everybody can hear and really settling down the front five by confirming IDs and getting to the line early and getting these guys on the same page.
All right, so there's been a theory advanced, and I understand the point that these folks are making. And I love Josh DiMaggio. I love Gabe Neitzel. But they are, and I don't want to misrepresent their position, but basically, and certainly Josh, I know, will correct me if I'm wrong. But essentially, it's their belief that the way that they run their running game and their offense as a whole, catering to some of Josh Jacobs' preferences, has been to the detriment of the offense as a whole. And so if he does not play on Sunday, which he did not practice yesterday, the injury is a bruise, a contusion. So that's good, as opposed to a ligament tear or whatever else it could be. But if he doesn't play, we'll see if he practices today. If he doesn't play, I don't think they think it's necessarily a bad thing to have Emmanuel Wilson in there instead. When you look at that and you think about, okay, what are you doing to more effectively integrate what Josh Jacobs prefers, but also having him do things that are, hey, what do the coaches always say to you? Get comfortable being uncomfortable. Is there, do you think that there's, I don't think that they're 100% right. I don't think that their position that they could be better off offensively without Josh Jacobs is accurate. What I do think is that there is some more compromise to be had. And that I think Josh's other point is not having Jacobs made LaFleur take the reins off of Jordan Love a little bit. I would say the way the Giants played defensively probably factored into it more than anything. How do you view Josh Jacobs with or without him, and whether or not that is in some way detrimental to what they're trying to do offensively, that they cater to his preferable setups?
So I will say this. I will always take an offense with Josh Jacobs than without Josh Jacobs. I will say that. So, like, I think everyone knows I am a Josh Jacobs fan. I love Josh Jacobs. I think he is a phenomenal running back. Like, I think the world of Josh Jacobs. So, like, I'm always going to be pro Josh Jacobs. If he can play, I want him to play. I think he's a great running back. Just like I love the running back on wearing purple. Like this week too, I love Aaron Jones. Like I love Aaron Jones too. Yeah. Two different backs, but like you know, but with that, I kind of understand where Gabe and Josh are starting, like where they're coming from, because I think what they're trying to say is they want zone running, and they want play action, and they want bootlegs, and they want keepers, and they want things like that. And those are things that, I mean, I know that Tausch and I have talked about. There's no doubt about it. And I think those are things that Matt Maia has not put out there as much with Josh, because Josh, I think, and that's Josh Jacobs, not DiMaggio, because Josh DiMaggio doesn't run the ball.
Thank you for clarifying. Yes.
He doesn't run the ball for the Packers. Jacobs does. He prefers more of a downhill style, right? Like he's more of a downhill patient duo in tight inside zone blocking tight back and from the gun as well. So like that's a tougher thing to do. And Matt has catered more to that, right? And he's gone to more what his back prefers, and it's changed the style of the run game a little bit, which then has changed the style of the play action game, which listen, you could say what you want. It has affected the way that the play action game has looked, right? You could say what you want. It just has.
Undeniable. I mean,
because it is different than the way it was when I was there. It's different than the way it was when I left for X amount of years, right? Until Jacobs came there. Now, you can say the run game last year with Jacobs was the most productive it's ever been since Matt's really gotten there, because it was. I mean, he's ran for the most yards and all, like you could say that too. So like there's pros and cons to it, right? Mm-hmm. So there's pros and cons to it. But if Josh does not play Jacobs, you may get a style that is more of what we have been used to seeing prior to Jacobs. And with that, it may be a change up to what the Vikings are used to seeing. Right, which could throw the Vikings off a little bit of what they are used to seeing on tape, which could be to the benefit of the Packers, right? If the Packers go back to something more of what they're used to doing, which is a very, full stretch, full flow, move this front, move the defense, run, get them to run and move that pocket on a play action and things like that under center, that can change the dynamic of the way the offense is run, for sure. That could definitely do that, and that can change the way the play action works. That can change the way this offensive line blocks, for sure. It can do all those things. And if you look at Minnesota up front from a whole, they are not a big front, right? Like, they are not a very big
Good
group
point.
Up front. Mm-hmm. They're not a huge group. So with that, like, you have to understand that, like, they're more of an athletic group. So, like, do you want to run it, like, to get them to run laterally? Because that's what they may excel at. So, like, is getting them to run laterally in your benefit? Because maybe going at them may be at your benefit. Going downhill and inside zone and tight and grinding and just, like, going straight at them more of the Jacob style. Or do you want to mix in both styles? Like, that's kind of the dilemma that you're in. Like, I watched a little bit of that Bears game yesterday. It replayed yesterday on NFL Network, and I watched a little bit of it. And the Bears had a lot of success. I mean, a bunch of success running outside zone and cutting off the backside of Thuney and those guys, you know, essentially doing that, a bunch of success. So, like, that's going to be something that LaFleur sees, and Steno, and like, they're going to see that. And that's something that I'm going to the well on. Like, I'm going to continue to go back on that. And that's something, and then when you continue to do that, you play action off of it. And, like, right. To me, that's just what I would do. So, like, I understand where they're coming from, but I still go back to, you can do that with Jacobs. You can do that with Jacobs, and I know Jacobs can do that. It's just a matter of, like, you got to – obviously, I'm not in the meeting rooms. I'm not playing with this group to understand why maybe they don't do it as much.
Right.
Like, why he doesn't want to be that wide stretch, you know, get to the aiming point, put your foot in the ground and cut back. You know, I don't know why that's not his, maybe not his preferred style, but why you can't do that 6-7 times a game. I don't know.
6-7, not, sure. I did ask him. You didn't even know you were doing that. I asked him that. He was a little evasive about it, frankly. And so I do think there's some there about what he's comfortable with versus what they want to do. All right, last thing so I can let you go somewhat on time here. The one thing that I do think is lacking that I agree with Joshy on and everyone else is that I think Jordan Love can be a really good rollout passer. Like,
yes.
The play fakes, he learned, you know, the guitar fake that that Rodgers loved to do, the hiding the ball. Like, I think Jordan can do all that, and then you get him rolling out, even if it's a naked rollout, and or maybe there's the one guy that comes with him as kind of a personal protector. I think that's an element of this offense that I don't understand why they don't do it more. Are you on board with wondering that yourself?
Yes. Well, I'll give you the answer right now, because they're out of gun a ton.
Right.
Because they're out of gun. When you're out of gun majority of the time, you can't do that. Like, and that's, I mean, I'm going to be honest. Like, I don't have PFF. I don't pay for that subscription, obviously. You know that. I never will.
I
but
but if I give you my password, you'll do it. You'll use it.
I would look at it, but I would love to see the breakdown of gun to under ratio of what they're at. Because if I had to take a guess, they are a majority gun team.
Mm-hmm. No doubt.
If I had to take a guess, but if you are under center more, you can do more of those things, right? You can be more of that hiding the ball and you know, booting out and doing those types of actions and hiding the football and doing that. Like, listen, and we all know this has become a more of a gun league, and you know, it's a passing league. We all understand that. Like, no one's we're not trying to fool anybody here. But, like, there is a time and a place for being under center and doing these things, right? Like, this, and Matt, and as we all know, when Matt first came in here in 2019, and when he came into that meeting room and he started going over this offense, and when one of the first things he said to us is, like, get comfortable being in a 3-point stance, was one of the first things they told us up front. And we all looked at him like, what are you talking about? We've been in 2-point stances like forever. He's like, well, get comfortable being in a 3-point stance, because we're going to be under and you're going to have tight ends next to you. And it was kind of like a, mind-blown situation, because like that was like the premise of this thing, right? Like that was like his identity as like how this thing was going to go, and then we build out from that, right? Like you build out right from that, and obviously there's opportunity, and we're going to be in the gun plenty, we're going to throw the ball plenty. We have Aaron Rodgers, and you know you're going to throw the ball plenty, so don't you worry about that. You're going to be able to pass block and have fun. Don't worry, which isn't fun, but you're going to be able to do that. But that's kind of why I think you haven't seen as much as that, because they're in the gun a bunch. And that's, to me, if they go under more, you'll see way more of that. Because I think Jordan can be really good at that, because I think he's a very good decision maker as he gets out, because I think he's got obviously, he shows he doesn't have much fear running at defenders, unfortunately.
Not enough. Seen.
Yeah, he doesn't have much fear as he runs at defenders. He throws the ball well on the move, and he, you know, he will run it. Like he'll run it, and he's evasive enough that he can gain yards, you know, when he breaks contain. So like it's a part of his game that I think is underrated. So I would love to see it more, right? I think it's a, because we all know how good Aaron was at it.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing him being able to do it would be, I think, would really help this team too, because what it does too is it helps the offensive line. It does. It gives right? them a break. It gives them a break. It does. Being able to have the offensive line full run cell, move that defensive line, wear the D-line out, take body shots on the D-line. Really, that's what it is. It's taking body shots sure. on the D-line and then have Jordan roll out and make good decisions and take deep shots too. Like, that's another part of it.
All right, get the hell out of here. I'll talk to you later today on the Homer Hour. Thank you for stepping into the breach. You're the best, man. Thanks a lot.
No problem. Talk to you later.
That is the great Brian Bulaga, who we are always smarter when we listen to him. Be smart when I talk to you here, though. If you want to win a chance for a special game day experience like never before, you got to get in on this contest with Dr. Pepper. You can win a pair of tickets to see Green Bay host Chicago on December 7th, and it will include reservations at the Tundra Trio, which is Green Bay's upscale tailgating destination. I stumble on that every single day. Our luxurious homes, steps from the stadium. We've got gourmet food each week, premium drinks, all thanks to Dr. Pepper and ESPN Wisconsin. All you got to do is enter at ESPNWisconsin.com or at ESPNWisconsinContest.com. It'll get you to the same place. Nothing hits like the bold signature flavor of Dr. Pepper. So make sure you enjoy an ice cold Dr. Pepper during your next trip to McDonald's. No purchase necessary. You must enter by November 23rd, which is coming up quick. So make sure you get to ESPNWisconsin.com to enter. More Wilde and Tausch with Riley Yauch and me next. So stick around. Tauscher, what are you doing here? The star of our program. He apparently used his crate, so he has a more traditional setup video-wise. Great Sendix hat, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you.
I also like to save my red bags from them, because they're great carrying bags when I go to Lambeau. I'm sorry. You were unloading 6-7 giant trucks full of food for the food bank at Feeding America Eastern Wisconsin. What are you doing back already? Are you like the bionic man when it comes to unloading a truck? Just
yeah, they have forklifts, so I'm not qualified to drive forklifts. So it was. You know what they always say, Jason? Work smarter, not harder. That's what we did.
So smarter, the forklifts have like three on a tree, like when you were driving that. What was it, a concrete truck you were driving? What were you driving on the
Beltline? No, I was just driving a regular old truck delivering a bathtub to an apartment complex that had a three on a tree old school Chevy pickup, and I didn't know how to get it out of first or second gear. Sure. So I just hummed that son of a gun down the belt line till she didn't hum no more.
It's one of my favorite stories.
Oil exploding and pulled off the side of the interstate. Didn't have cell phones back then, so I had a walkie-talkie across the whole operation. And my old buddy Gramsy, who I was working with, was saying I should be fired over the walkie-talkie. So the whole thing was pretty good.
What are friends for? So we had a great conversation with your boy Blue, okay. Especially about the offense and
what did he think of the? He's not a real snap count guy.
He got a big kick out of that. He told the story of a game where they had 90 offensive snaps and they were all dying, and no one was able to say, "Hey, sorry, I'm not really a big snap count guy."
I just would have loved to ask, hey, Campy, yeah, I'm going to play 75 snaps. That's just what I do. And then after that, you're on your own. Like that whole concept. And I get D linemen are different, but I'm not a big snap count guy. It's one of my favorite quotes.
Yes, it is. It's the quote of the year so far. I am curious. The one thing we did get into, and I know this is something that you've advocated for along with going tempo, is rolling Jordan Love out.
Okay.
And Brian's point was essentially, look, if you're going to be in the gun as much as they are, you're not going to be able to do that stuff as much. It's just not as feasible. It's not as effective in terms of the play action game and then rolling out, you know, the run, selling the run one direction with your line and him coming out the other side. It's just not going to be as frequently a doable thing. So I thought that was interesting. We're going to play trivia next, so if you want to stick around for that before the 11 o'clock hour, that'd be great.
You're still in the 10 o'clock hour.
We are indeed. Well,
so
I
maybe
thought,
it's not – hey, maybe it's not old T's fault that you're always late on the clock. Maybe.
No, it's
– Can
it's
we agree?
No, we can't agree.
Jason,
I could tell you what –
I haven't been on a show and you're – It's 10:55 and you're still in the only the third segment. That ain't I don't have anything to do with that.
Well, oddly enough you do.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because No. I'm not blaming you, but your presence. Let me finish. Your presence is so vital to the quality of the program. In fact, I had Giuseppe, which is a great name. One of my favorite quasi-uncles growing up, his name was Giuseppe, suggesting that the show should be you and Brian Bulaga. So
well,
again,
that's not very nice to
look,
you.
I know, it's not, but I agree that the show's obviously far better when one or the other is on. And I'm usually here regardless. My point is that I didn't know how long you were going to be gone, so I went a little longer with Blue to kind of protect myself from doing anything by myself.
Gotcha.
So I'm pleasantly surprised you're here. We're going to do trivia next. A couple of quick tidbits from Matt LaFleur at the podium. One, he says that Josh Jacobs will participate in at least individual drills today.
Mm-hmm.
So bad news for Josh DiMaggio, who'd like to see the offense run more smoothly without him. And two, Brandon McManus, Matt LaFleur says, kicked yesterday and had, quote, a really good day.
Let's go.
He will kick again tomorrow. So that's where things stand on the kicking front. We need to play trivia. Tausch, since you're back and Riley is in the answering the phone seat and not the Iron Jock answering the phone seat, which is coming back later in the program, what caller do you think we should have Riley answer the phone for trivia?
14.
Wow, you must really like Riley.
Mm. I do. I think Riley's a star. I think Riley has star qualities. He's been complimented. Just some folks complimenting how he approaches Badger press conferences and his professionalism over there, the way he calls high school games. Plus, there's 14 teams chasing a championship this weekend. That's why it's 14.
All right, caller 14 right now. 844-770-3776. 844-770-3776. Caller 14 for trivia presented by Iron Jock and by Cousin Subs. Caller 14 right now. 844-770-3776. It's Wilde and Tausch. We are into the 11 o'clock hour, even though we shouldn't be. But we've got Tausch back. We've got some things we want to get to there. So we got to get to trivia right now.
Wilde and Tausch Trivia is brought to you by Cousin Subs and Iron Jock. Cousin Subs' $10 meal deal gives you a 7.5-inch sub, bag of chips or regular fries, fountain drink, and a cookie, all for just $10. This deal is only available online or through the Cousins app.
Let's welcome in our contestant. It is Jim on the South Side. Jim, good morning. How are you today?
Good morning, gentlemen. Very good, very good. And my wife gave me a helpful hint. She said not to swear today, so I'll try not to do that.
Well, she's really going to love question one then. The category for today, Riley, did you do these? These are all your work?
Yes, I did.
Love it. The category is state championship trivia. Question number one is this. The Edgar Wildcats battle the Darlington Redbirds in the Division VI state title game today. Who is Edgar's legendary head coach looking for his 10th championship? Is it Jerry Sins, Jack Del Rio, or Bruce in Cassville?
Well, I don't know, but considering the laughter I heard, I'm going to stick with number one.
Indeed, Jerry Sins. Tausch, you're familiar with his legendary status?
He coached when I played. Everybody knew. You play the Edgar Wildcats. The Sins is, there's like 100 Sins kids, it felt like. Jeremy, like, there's a lot of. He had a lot of his kids that were really good players that came through, and he's kept it rolling up there in Edgar.
All right, one for one, Jim. Question two is this, and if you were paying attention earlier in the show, you should get this right, it turns out. Bayport defeated Muskego to earn the right to play Arrowhead in the Division I state title game. What is Bayport's mascot? Is it the Buccaneers, the Bears, or the Pirates?
Well, saying there, Bayport, I noticed you changed your hat. I'm going to say the Pirates.
I did. I was told I was being IPT, so I changed to Timmy Lasso. You're two for two. Jim, question three. The Notre Dame Tritons are looking for their second straight state title this year. Last year, their running back set the record for most yards in a state championship game with 408.
That's a good day.
How was he?
That's a good day.
That's who in his name... How many yards did Melvin Gordon have in a game? Didn't he have 408 in a game?
408.
Three quarters.
Crazy. Ball, yep.
So I can tell you it's not Melvin Gordon. Is this running back's name?
Darn.
Kingston Allen, Christian Collins, or Steve Haugum?
Blind guess, I'm going number two.
Christian Collins is correct.
Wow.
Yeah. A good Christian boy at Notre Dame with 408 rushing yards. Collins is the correct answer. Jim, you got them all. Three for three. You got four entries, and you didn't use any profanity. I think that's a win for all.
Not yet, he did.
You and Jim on the same page.
There we are.
Hey, I love you guys.
Thanks for playing, Jim. We appreciate you, buddy.
I love you guys.
That is Will Diantausch Trivia presented by Cousin Subs and Iron Jock.
Will Diantausch Trivia is brought to you by Cousin Subs and Iron Jock. Performance apparel that actually performs. No stink, just performance. And proudly Wisconsin built. Shop now at ironjock.com.
Don't forget an Iron Jock opportunity in the 11 o'clock hour coming up. I hope Riley's going to get a nice high number for that, because
he's got a big number coming.
Is a very nice prize. So we look forward to playing that. I want to remind you again, as I do every Thursday, if you need a better night's sleep, if those have been hard to come by lately, you're not alone. And the right mattress can make all the difference. That's why Helix Sleep and Steinhoffels have teamed up to bring their award-winning mattresses to Steinhoffels. Now, you can try Helix in person, something you can't do just anywhere. Right now, Steinhoffels is offering 20% off all Helix mattress orders just for our listeners. So head on over to steinhoffels.com to learn more. Helix Sleep at Steinhoffels. Better sleep starts now. The 10 o'clock, the 11 o'clock hour of Wilde and Tausch doesn't start now. It starts in 2 minutes, so stick around.